Well, Kinalak, that night, the slave went to bed in the slave room, the room of slaves. And the king went to bed in his pajamas. And the king was thinking, oh, it's so wonderful. I hope I'm going to have a nice palace for my queen now, because my queen is so upset every day that she's living in the old palace that she doesn't like anymore and she wants a new palace. And the queen went to sleep thinking, oh, finally, I hope I'm going to get my palace. I hope that slave finishes in 6 months. I'm tired of living in this old palace. I want the new palace. Kinalak, the slave did not go to sleep in his slave bed. Because, actually, this slave did not sleep. He never slept. If you didn't figure it out already, this was no ordinary person, and he was no ordinary slave. This happened to be a special, well, I can't say really a person, more of a malach. He used to be a person, and he became a malach. Do you think you know who this was? Here's a boy with a big smile on his face, and he's very excited to say it.
Eliyahu Hanavi.
Eliyahu Hanavi. This was Eliyahu Hanavi. Exactly. Very good. Actually, the boy who answered Eliyahu Hanavi has the name Eliyahu in his name. So he really knew. Kinalach, Eliyahu Hanavi says to himself, I'm not going to spend 6 months building this palace. I've got plenty of other important things to do for Hashem, helping Jews all over the world that are in trouble. To spend 6 months in the palace building the new palace, that would not be a good way for me to spend my time. And so this is what Eliyahu Hanavi did. He quietly davened to Hashem and he said, Hashem, please send me plenty of workers. Not man workers I'm going to pay for silver and gold, but plenty of malachim workers, and let's get busy building the palace right now. And in the middle of the night, Eliyahu Hanavi went out of the slave room, even if it was locked, he has no problem getting out of the slave room, and he goes out into the big garden, and he goes to the other side of the garden where the big open place is to build a new palace. And from the Himmel, Hashem sent him thousands of builder malachim, ready to do whatever Eliyahu would tell them. And they start building the palace that night, according to the plans that Eliyahu showed the king and the queen. And do you know how long it took all of those builder malachim and Eliyahu and Abi to build the palace? Not 6 months. And not even 5 months or 4 months or 3 months or 2 months. Not even 1 month. Do you know how long it took them to build that palace?
A day.
And not even they had to wait for the day because they started at night. Do you know how long it took them to build that palace?
A night.
Just. How long did it take them to build that palace?
1 day.
Well, it was nighttime. Do you think it took a whole day? Take another guess.
One night.
It took them 1 night. And by the morning, that palace was finished. On the outside and on the inside. It was a gorgeous, beautiful, brand new palace with all of the different things that the queen wanted to have to make her happy. And of course, when Eliyahu Hanavi was done doing that, do you think he went back into the room of slaves and went schluffy in his slave bed? No. He left to do important things that Hashem wants him to do to help Yidden all over the world, as we know that Eliyahu Hanavi does that. And now, Kinalak, it's the morning. And now it became the morning, and the king wakes up. And of course, what does the king do when he wakes up? I don't think he washed Nail of Asr or said Maidiani or anything like that. He gets up and he goes to the window to get a breath of fresh air on his beautiful patio, overlooking his gardens. This is how the king wakes up. Doesn't have to run to work or anything like that. He can take his time. And in his pajamas, of course, probably had his crown on his head, he goes to the big patio outside of his bedroom that overlooks the gardens. And he's taking his nice breath of fresh air and looking at the nice, beautiful flowers and trees. And all of a sudden, on the other side of the garden, he says, "What's that? It looks like a big palace. Wait a minute. That looks exactly like the palace that the slave made on the picture yesterday, on the plans. And that's the palace that he was going to build, and he was going to start building, and it's going to take him 6 months. So wait a minute. It looks like that's the palace, not on a picture. It looks like a real palace. Oh, wait a minute. It's impossible. I must still be sleeping. I must be dreaming." And he starts pinching himself. Ow! Hey, that hurt. And he sees, well, hey, wait a minute. I'm not sleeping. I'm awake. And he looks at his bed. Am I still in my bed? Yeah, I don't see myself in my bed. I'm here. That means I'm awake. That means the palace is really there. Wait a minute. Something is fishy. Maybe I am sleeping. Maybe this whole thing is a dream. And he wakes up the queen. Hey, queen, wake up. You have to see this. I'm still tired. How come you're waking me up? I want to sleep some more. No. You have to see something over here. Can't it wait? I don't think it can wait. You have to see. And the queen gets up, and the king says, "Come to the patio. Come to the patio and look out over the gardens. Tell me what you see." Look! It's the palace! It's the palace! It's all built! It's beautiful! It's gorgeous! And they were not dreaming. It was really the palace. And they run out into the garden, across the garden. They run over to the palace, and they go inside. And they see it's wonderful, just like the plans. And it was built overnight. How could this be? Let's bring the slave. Let's give him a double bag of gold. We'll let him go free today. The slave did a wonderful job. How did he do it? Let's find out. And they go to the room of the slaves. And no one could find him because he wasn't there. Kinalach, let's go now from this part of the story to the Tati and his family. The Tati had taken the money. Of course, he gave tzedakah and he bought things for his family that they needed. And then he put money into a business that he was able to make more money. And Baruch Hashem, the family now was a happy family with all the money they needed and all the things they needed. And the Tati was very happy, except he was also inside feeling very bad and very sad. And he was worrying, and he was concerned. Do you know what he was thinking about that made him feel sad? What do you think he was thinking about?
Because he sold this slave.
Because he sold that slave. Here, all of the good that he has is from selling somebody, a nice man, to be a slave. And that bothered him very much. Okay, Mirz Hashem, tomorrow we will continue with the story. And we will finish it tomorrow, Blinetter. And we'll start a new story tomorrow, Be'ezus Hashem, in Yerushalayim. Because, of course, Mashiach will come today. We'll be in Yerushalayim tomorrow. But we'll still learn in Yeshiva. And we'll hear more stories and learn more Torah. Because the Torah keeps going on. Especially when Mashiach comes, it's going to be special learning Torah. I will have plenty more time for stories. This is what happened. The Tati was helped by selling the slave. But now the Tati is very, very upset. He says, "Look, all of my good luck and the money and helping the family came from selling a nice man to be a slave. I'm very, very upset that I did that. I feel bad that I did that. And even though he wanted me to do that, why did I listen to him? I sold somebody to be a slave." Can you enjoy something if you did something wrong to get it? No. One day, the Tati was walking in the marketplace because he had his business and he was, Baruch Hashem, able to make money for his family. So he went to the marketplace to do the business. And as he's walking, thinking about the business things that he has to do, he's also feeling sad in his heart, remembering that he sold the man to be a slave. And all of a sudden, in the crowd, he sees the man that he sold to be a slave. Hey, there he is. There he is. And he runs to the crowd and he says, "Hello, hello, do you remember me?" And at first the man who he sold to be a slave didn't recognize him. Or at least he said he didn't recognize him. No, I'm not sure that I recognize you. Who are you? And how do you recognize me? Don't you know who I am? I'm the man that was very, very poor and very upset and crying, and you came over to me and you said that I should sell you to be a slave. Don't you remember? Oh, yes, I remember. Oh, you look so much better now. Baruch Hashem. Yes, I sold you to be a slave, and I see that somehow you're not a slave anymore because you're walking in the marketplace. I've been so worried about you ever since. What happened to you? Well, he says, remember, I told you I wasn't going to be a slave for too long. Remember, I told you I wouldn't be a slave for too long because I'm a builder. And that's exactly what happened. So I was okay. Don't worry about me. But what's doing with you? But I'm more concerned for you than you should be concerned for me. Because you were very poor and now you're doing okay. And the Tati says, I never want to be poor again. And I don't want my children to be poor either. And the nice man who was Eliyahu HaNavi said, he smiled and he says, I will tell you three things to do. And if you do these three things, you will keep your money and your children will also have all the money they need. Now, who would like to hear the three things you should do? Because if this is a story, and it's a story that we're listening to, it must be we could learn something from it. How many people in this lunchroom would like always to have all the money they need and never to be poor and always have for themselves, and even when they grow up, their children should have money? Well, listen to these three things. Number one, he says, you should love the poor people and always help them. Always give tzedakah and do it with a smile and be as nice as you can to poor people. Number two, you should have Avas Yisrael and help everyone you can. Always do a favor for somebody in any way that you could help somebody. Number three, you have to be humble. Does anybody know what that word means? That's an English word. In Hebrew, it's an anav. What does humble mean?
Hold yourself low.
Hold yourself low. Don't be a big shot or a balgaiva or a show-off or a Mr. Metzius man. Be low like a matzah and don't be puffy like a bread. Shh. If you do those three things and you also teach those ways to your children, if you do those three things and you teach your children to behave in those ways, Hashem will help you to always have all the money you need. Akin Allah, we learn a very important thing from this story, and those are the things that we just said. And also, there's a very important thing, if you think about the story that we learned, that you could use. And that is, when the Tati had no way out of his problem, of his trouble, and the family was starving, and he had no money, and he goes to the town and he didn't even know what he's going to do. What did he do? You know what he did? He davened to Hashem. And he asked Hashem to help him. because he just didn't know what his next step should be. Did Hashem help him? Yes, Hashem heard his davening. When you daven from your heart, Hashem listens and he helps. And the Tati was crying, and he was thanking the nice man. And he wiped the tears away from his eyes, and he opened up his eyes, and he saw the man was not there. He was gone. And he wanted to run after him in the crowd. And he ran after him in the crowd, but he didn't find him. You know why he didn't find him? Because it was Eliyahu HaNavi, and he was off doing something else to help another Yid somewhere in the world. Now, there was a big, big tzaddik, and his name was Reb Moshe Leib of Sosov. You've probably heard his name, Reb Moshe Leib of Sosov, a big, big tzaddik. Well, ken alach. He passed away. Like it happens that a tzaddik, or any person in the world, because of, as we learn in Chumash, the eight hadas, and it brought the whole thing of the world into the world of dying, right? So even a big tzaddik like that passes away. Otherwise, they would live forever. We would all live forever. Only a few people went alive into the Shemayim. Most people pass away. Now, where do you think a big tzaddik like Reb Moshe Leib of Sosov would go after he passes away? To Gan Eden, right? Yes. Of course. But it so happens that, apparently, according to what I heard in this story the other night, that everyone has to go through the other place first. Now, I had thought that some people don't have to go at all through the other place. It seems that everyone who passes away before they go to Gan Eden, they must pass through the other place. Of course, it's such a horrible place and such a scary place. We don't even want to say the name of it, but we'll say the name of it so we know what we're talking about. It's called Gehenna. Now, Gehenna is a place where, unfortunately, Chas V'Shalom, people go there for punishments. Now, a punishment is, of course, not just to be mean, because these are Hashem's punishments. Punishments are a way of getting a person ready to go to Gan Eden. What does Hashem want? To punish? No, of course not. He wants a person to go to Gan Eden and to have the big reward and the beautiful time in Gan Eden. But there are different kinds of neshamas when they pass away. Now, we said once, we explained, like we say in the davening in the morning, the neshama is tahira. It's completely clean. When you get it from Hashem, the neshama is completely clean. And we gave the mashal like a white sheet, or a white, beautiful tablecloth. And Gan Eden is like Shabbos, the beautiful halakha, wonderful, sweet Shabbos. Now, if you put a beautiful white tablecloth on the table for Shabbos, is that nice? Of course. Is that the way it should be? Of course. That will go together beautifully with Shabbos. Then it's going to be Lakavod Shabbos, a beautiful, white, clean tablecloth, right? Now, what if right before Shabbos, there's a little bit of dust on the tablecloth? Do you want to put a dusty tablecloth on the table for Shabbos? No. You have to get rid of the dust. So what do? You shake it out a little bit. The dust flies off, and now the tablecloth is clean. What if there's some kind of schmutz on the tablecloth? Well, maybe you have to wash it out with hot water and soap. So that's what you do to get it clean. What if there's oil and grease and gook and yucky schmutz that is in the tablecloth? And you shake it out and nothing happens. And you wash it out with soap and hot water and nothing happens. Are you going to put that on the table for Shabbos?
No.
No, of course not. It's just not going to be nice for Shabbos. The person would look at it and go, ugh, what kind of a tablecloth is that for Shabbos? Ooh, it doesn't go together with Shabbos. Take it off. It doesn't belong in the nice room for Shabbos. You have to get rid of it. You have to get rid of that cook and yuck. And it's going to be very difficult. Now, the same thing is Gehenim. If a person does tshuva, or if in the first place, l'chatchila, they have no averes at all, they're a big tzaddik, there's nothing on the tablecloth. It's ready for Shabbos. As soon as they pass away, and the neshama goes above to Hashem, he puts it right away in Gan Eden. Because he's ready to go to Gan Eden right away. His neshama is still clean. And the beautiful, clean neshama goes into the wonderful Gan Eden right away, like the Shabbos tablecloth goes on the Shabbos table right away. If a person has a few avedas that he might not have done enough tshuva for, but it's just a little bit, then he has to go to Gehenim just for a little time, whatever that means, time after a person passes away, and they have to shake out the shmutz from the neshama, and then it goes to Gan Eden. If there is some gook and yucky stuff, if there's bigger avedas, the person might have to go chas v'shalom for a longer time to Gehenim. As you see, to get cleaned out, not just a punishment, to get cleaned out. And what if there's a very yucky, gooky stuff there? Then he really has to go through quite a time in Gehenim, which nobody would want to go through. Then they finally get cleaned, because whoever goes to Gan Eden has to be all clean. Now, it seems, from this story anyway, that even a perfect tzaddik who has no avedas, he has to go at least pass through Gehenim. It does not mean that he gets punished, but he has to pass through and see down there what's going on. He has to see. He has to go through and see. Like there's two kinds of trains. One kind of train, when it comes to the place, it stops. And people have to get out. Another kind of train, it passes right by, but when you look through the window, you could see. And you go by very fast. Do you get out? No, you don't even get out. So it seems that on the way to Gan Eden, everybody has to pass through Gehenim, and at least they have to look out the window for a while. And this Reb Meisha Leib Sassov, they were passing him through Gehenim on the way to Gan Eden. All of a sudden he said, stop. And the Malachim that were taking him said, Reb Meisha Leib, you don't have to stop here. You're a great tzaddik. You don't need to stop here in Gehenim. He says, no, stop, stop. But why should you stop? You can go to Gan Eden. You're right on your way to Gan Eden. He says, look what's going on there. Look at these people suffering. Look what's going on in Gehenim. Look at the people that are crying and suffering and they're being punished. This is terrible. I don't want to leave them here by themselves. I don't want to leave them here to suffer. I feel bad for them. How can I go to Gan Eden to be together so close to Hashem with all the wonderful rewards and all the big halakha lights of Gan Eden, and I'm going to leave these yidden here? I'm going to leave these people here to suffer? No, no, stop. I want to take them with me. He wants to take them with me. I don't want to go to Gan Eden until I take these people out of here with me. Now there's a whole tumult now in the Himmel. Because there's Malachim that they are in charge of bringing Reb Meisha Leib of Sassov to Gan Eden. And he deserves to go to Gan Eden because he's such a big tzaddik. But he doesn't want to go. Can you make a tzaddik do something that he doesn't want to do? No. Tzaddik Goizer v'Hakadosh Baruch Hu Makayim. What a tzaddik says, that's what Hashem does. A tzaddik has such a koyach that what he says, Hashem listens and does what he says. Rabbi Meisha Leib says, I'm not going to Gan Eden. I'm going to stay here. But he wasn't on the list to be in Gehenim. the Malachim of Gehenna didn't have him to be on the list. And a person doesn't just all of a sudden make up his mind to go to Gehenna, Chas V'Shalom. So there was a whole tumult, and they brought it in front of the great judge, Hashem himself. What's going to be with Reb Moshe Leib Sasser? Does he have to stay? Is he going to stay with the people in Gehenna or what? But he doesn't want to stay in Gehenna. He wants everyone to go out of Gehenna into Gan Eden. Now, these people in Gehenna, are they deserving to go to Gan Eden yet? No, they're being punished for Averis. Now, this is what happened. They decided, we are going to count the favors that Reb Moshe Leib of Sasav did for another Jew. How many times did he help another Yid? Even one time to help another Yid. To carry something, to visit him, to say nice words, to give tzedakah, to feed somebody, to give somebody clothes, to make somebody feel better. Any little favor that a person, that he did for somebody, they're going to count them up. For each favor, they're going to let one person out of Gehenna. Now, they counted up all of the times that Reb Moshe Leib Sasser did something to help another Yid. Now, do you think it was only a few times or many, many times? Many, many times. They counted up how many favors, and they counted up the people that were then in Gehenna. Do you know how it came out? Exactly how many people were suffering in Gehenna, that's how many favors exactly that he did for Yidden. So they all were let out, and they all went together with him in to Gan Eden. Now just think, if he would, now he was a tzaddik. Let's just pretend now, because a tzaddik we know always does what Hashem wants. Let's pretend that he would have, Chas V'Shalom, had a chance to help somebody and did not help somebody. What would have happened? Somebody would have been left in Gehenna. Now, one thing we learn from this story, because it says that every yid is a tzaddik, every yid's neshama is like a tzaddik. When you do a favor for another yid, is it just that you help somebody in this world, or it could be your neshama is helping somebody in the next world too? It could be your neshama is connected to somebody in the next world, and you're helping them in the next world. And if you do the chance to be nice to another yid and do a favor, you're helping him. What if somebody comes to you and says, please help me, I need you, can you do something for me? And let's say, of course, sometimes you just can't. Sometimes you, according to the Torah, you cannot stop what you're doing. That is sometimes. But let's say you are just doing something that you would like to do, and you really could take time to help another yid. Should you let the chance go by, or should you stop what you're doing and help another yid? Okay, help another yid. First of all, that's the mitzvah of Avos Yisrael. And second of all, you never know what your neshama is doing above, to help above, because you're doing something down below and you're helping in the world. Because our neshama is